Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back. This is Andy Peaches. It's freedomtalkradio.co.uk, live every day as often as we can, mainly 7 p.m. London time. That's 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time in the Americas. Right, today we're on episode 3, and I've titled this, "We've Lost Our Linda to the Martins." It's a family dispute over the poor lady's estate. She's now died. It's a true story. It involves solicitors, courts, police, covering up, colluding, deceit, abuse of power, financial fraud, housebreaking, and much, much more. David, welcome to the show again. And today we're going to look at a bit of the evidence, I think, of what actually happened, you know, who did what, where, and when. You know, we know what the lawyer done. Tell us a bit more about who's done what to you in the authorities.
Well, anyone I seem to go to, I just seem to run into a brick wall, and the Law Society haven't done anything about it. They have stated in writing that Miss Mary O'Toole of O'Toole McRandall should not be working for my sister, as my sister is a beneficiary and an executor of the will, and so am I. So she's sided with one party. And what has actually happened is my mother changed the will. My mother gave instructions to Miss Mary O'Toole. She left, and instead of following through with the will, she contacted my sister, and they both discussed that my mother wanted to change her will, and they decided that it wouldn't happen. And to see it contesting it at a later stage or a later date, and that's what they've actually put in their sworn affidavits.
Well, and you've not had a very good time either, have you, in court? The judges and the staff making a mockery, basically, of not just justice, but a poor lady's estate that, you know, they should be treating with respect, you know.
Yes, that's right. Yes, they just really want to launder the estate. It's an administrative court. So they're only interested really on the figures. So we've had the police officer, Paul Ferris, come as a witness on couple of occasions, and the barrister would meet him outside the court and tell him that he wouldn't be required, and then the hearing would go on, and all the judge had to do was say, bring Mr. Paul Ferris in here, and we can see what we're saying here, you know, here is evidence. But the barrister would not let him go into the court, and it just goes on and on. It's a frightening situation to be in. Your mother's passed away. She's not here to speak up for herself. And as I say, my sister didn't really have a good relationship with my mother. And at the end, she's coming to destroy the estate because it will all go in financial bills in the court. The judge has said a couple of times, the judge Steeney, no, there's not going to be anything left in the estate. So I believe that's what they're doing. They're just running it. I've been to court, I would say, 20 times now. At least 15 to 20 times I've attended the court.
Yeah, and you're during today, wasn't you? But they wouldn't accept the doctor's sick note as evidence of unable to attend, which is very, very bad. I mean, if you think that the Department of Work and Pensions or an employer, they're very happy to accept sick notes from a GP. Why isn't the courts?
Oh, the judges go sick, and that's okay. You know, you go in there and say, well, he's off on sick at the moment. I mean, I can't ask for his medical notes. And it's all one-sided, Andy.
Well, maybe next time that occasion happens, you do ask for his sick note. Has he provided the court with a sick note?
Yes.
Tomorrow's show, we're going to be naming and shaming everybody, and by ringing them up, I think it's time to get a little bit heavy to see if they'll comment, really, while you're on the line. But today we're going to look into a friend that went into court with you, aren't we, and to see and to tell everybody, really, that, you know, it's not just you saying this. Somebody's witnessed all this happening
yes.
in front of their own eyes, haven't they? And that's your friend.
Yes, I think you've made an arrangement. That's Philip Brown. And I think it's maybe you planned, you weren't sure what day that would be, Wednesday or Thursday or something. Today we have Graham Wilson, who's a family friend and knows my mother very well. Graham would be like a brother.
Okay.
He came to our family home for dinner and Sunday dinner and gave me my first guitar lessons. And he knows my sister very well. He went to school with my sister. And he also knows her husband well, and he has met them recently. And he's here today to speak on the show.
Okay, regarding the family situation rather than the court, yeah, we'll do the other gentleman on Wednesday then, because tomorrow
yes.
I think is name and shame day, and then it's going to work out into a nice five-piece story, you know?
Yes.
There's some feedback, by the way. I can hear you talking twice. It may be coming from the other phone, but it doesn't matter.
Maybe I should move away.
Yeah, probably. Just move away from each other. Yeah, so what's next, then, if they don't accept you as being available today, you know, in court? What's the next? What are they going to do next?
Well, I believe they'll just go over the top of the it's a fractured back, so I'm on pain medication. And today's a very bad day here. The weather's very bad, and it'll be very difficult for me to get to court because I'm in pain. I'm taking strong painkillers, and you don't sleep well when you're in pain, so I'm exhausted. I had this. Had an accident. I broke my tailbone at the bottom of the back. So I sent them basically a cease and desist notice this morning. And also, I give them authority to contact the Royal Accident and Emergency. They have the X-ray off my back. I did notice another email that I got from them where they want my doctor to attend the court and be cross-examined.
Wow.
So I believe they would be trying to possibly use the doctor against me.
Mm.
And they're up to all the tricks of the day. It's not a laughing matter, really, but it's a nervous laugh, you know.
Well, we've still got the commercial liens on the...
Yes, I'm pursuing that, yes.
And ways of enforcing the liens. We just need to listen to Dr. Steve Curry's audio of a couple of weeks ago, which I sent you, and it does tell you the 20 other steps in enforcing
yes.
the liens, and one of them would be put an advert in the paper. You could put the leaflets out around the court, the police officers concerned, the lawyers' offices. You could, you know, do loads of different things still. You could
yes.
probably, if you had the money, you could put it on a billboard where a van all day long travels around Belfast saying, these people have had a commercial lien, Google it, you know. That'd be fantastic.
Yes. I tried the local papers to advertise my lien, and they refused to do it. So I think the only one I believe that would do it would be the UK column, an English paper, you know.
I don't know. They, you know, it's an advert's an advert. It doesn't. It could say, you know, I want to date Mary Poppins tomorrow. It doesn't have to make any sense to them what they print.
But I did post them on Facebook, and friends have actually shared them with their friends. So there's been quite a lot of coverage there on Facebook.
And we've got
Trump media.
We've got ExposeTheEstablishment.com. Got the court videos now in there. We've got a couple of documents. I always feel if you put too many documents on a site or too many recordings, people don't understand what's going on. So I've limited it at the moment, but I've keeping the evidence mainly in case, you know, we need to, in case something happens to your evidence, somebody else has got it then.
That's right, yes.
All right, then, should we talk to the... Does the family friend want to talk?
Yes, I don't mind, Andy. I'll talk, yes.
Go on, then. You carry on.
Well, no, I would just like to say, actually, that I think it's appalling what's been happening here. I really, really do. I mean, Linda, who is David's sister, left home years ago. She really doesn't have any form of right to this property whatsoever. She's hardly ever been in it. She got married to Ray Martin years and years ago. I can't, because I've lived in London for 30 years and I'm only back, so I can't give you exact years and dates. But, I mean, she's been away from home for years and years and years, and David Bartlett has been staying at home, looking after his mother, caring for her, doing everything he possibly could for her. And I just think it's appalling. Not only that, Linda's married a very wealthy man. They don't need the money. You know, it's just pathetic. It's really very, very sad in this day and age that families have to resort to these sort of measures to try and, just get money. It's ridiculous, isn't it? It's pure greed.
I remember last night's show that David was listening to part of it when a lady called Diane Smith, and she's very clever with catching the land registry out at their own game, in all countries, and I'm sure she said the right of the property is more to property, not money, not assets, just property. When somebody's dead, the rights of the property is more on the person who lived in it the most out of the people who are left. It's nothing to do with got to share it 50-50 because equal parties need 50% each. It's more to do with who lived in it. And the woman said last night on the show, I'm sure she did, that is no different than if it was a council rented property where the property goes straight to the person who lived there.
Well, exactly. I totally agree. And I don't know why Linda's being like this, because David deserves everything. It's not like it's a massive 10-bedroom house. It's a very nice semi-detached house in rural Belfast, and I just don't understand why, after me going to school with Linda, knowing Linda really, really well, I mean, we were very close. She was actually in my class. We were both in the same class the whole way through the school, and this might allow me to bring up the subject of her boyfriend at the time, who was my best friend. We'd known each other since we were three. His name was Godfrey Hunter, which you don't hear children being christened that name very often nowadays. And he was a wonderful guy, very, very loving guy, very compassionate, very caring, very sensitive, came from a wonderful home. One sister, two brothers, and we befriended each other at a very, very young age, and he stayed at my house every weekend and everything. But, I mean, they'd been going out for a number of years. Linda and Godfrey had been very, very happy. And, just all of a sudden, he decided to join the police over here in Northern Ireland. And, you have to go and do a big course. It was an Inniskillen in those days in Fermanagh, which you had to spend about 16 to 18 weeks, and then you come out as a qualified constable. And he decided to do this to build a future for him and Linda. And on the weekend that he came back from finalising all his police stuff and got qualified as a constable in the RUC, as it was then, the Royal Ulster Constabulary. He was a very happy man and thought he'd achieved something, and it was great. And we were all invited to a party. And Linda was invited as well. And when we got to the party, Godfrey went upstairs and found Linda with another man. So obviously this had all been going on when Godfrey had been in Enniskillen. And I believe to this day, and I think David believes to this day, that that was the main reason why Godfrey actually committed suicide about 2 weeks later, which is a horrendously sad story. It really did hit us all like a sledgehammer. I don't even think I'm still over it, to be honest with you. But that seemed to change Linda then. You know, she seemed to go into like a small introverted shell. She wouldn't really speak or talk to anybody for a while. She just hung about with Ray. And it was Ray Martin who Godfrey actually caught Linda in a compromising position with at the time, and it was just a horrendous situation. So, Linda, I could blame her for a lot of things, Andy, to be honest with you, and I think it's dreadful that she's treating her 53-year-old brother like this. She's just lost his lovely mother. She was a wonderful woman, Helen. Great hairdresser, super, ran a lovely business, a great home, looked after her kids very, very well, loved them to bits. So, obviously, if there's anything I can do to help, I will, that's why I'm on here today speaking to you.
No, it'd be very good if you can look after David. He has been a little bit busy recently, and I'm glad to hear that he's got some good people around him now.
Yes.
Because he spent all these few weeks when I first got to know him helping Patrick Coyle, which is another unfair case of justice. But anyway, the point is he put his own life on hold for other people. Why can't Linda and her husband do the same? Because it does actually say, and I've sent it to David, more or less, that, you know, if there's not a partner involved, the right of the house does go, in the first case, to the siblings, the child. I mean, I know it's an older child, but it still says to the siblings, basically, of the woman, and you get more rights if you lived in the house. I mean, that's the legal side. Why are the courts not just saying, well, okay, David gets the house, the money will have to decide later on. You know, why can't they just do that immediately?
Well, you see, I don't know. The only thing that twigged in my head was I'd just come home. My father passed away, God rest him. And as I say, I've been in England for all my life, nearly. And I came back. I'd only been here for about 3 weeks. And I went down to one of the local bars. I couldn't believe it. Ray, Linda and Ray were sitting there, and they've adopted this lovely wee girl, and they were sitting there with the girl, and they were having a meal in the restaurant. Well, first of all, they ignored me. They didn't really want to come over. I don't think Ray recognized me, but Linda recognized me straight away. And she never came over. She never said anything. And, I just thought, well, I'm going to hang on here and wait and see how long it takes them to come over and have some manners and just say hello. So they finished their meal, and they'd paid the bill, and they were getting up to go, and I couldn't believe it. So I just went over, oh, yeah, and they sort of, oh, yeah, Graham, yeah, we remember you now, which is nonsense. They knew exactly who it was, so I walked in. And I said, so how are you, how are things, and how's David? And as soon as I mentioned David, it was a horrendous situation. Well, don't believe a word that beep, beep, beep says he's a complete nutter. This, that, and the other. I said, oh, no, come on, this is ridiculous. And I want, you know, what's going on? And as I say, they don't need the money. But from what I've seen and what I can witness, and all of the bits and balls and paradigms and back and forward trying to sort this out, there is some form of skullduggery going on here where there is fraud happening. There has to be, because Linda and Ray obviously have this barrister or solicitor in their pocket. You know, they must be getting them a couple of wee backhanders here and there. And it's just torment, you know, for Jim. So I haven't been to see them. I won't get in touch with them now. I think it's absolutely appalling. And I hope there's something that the show will do to help. And I hope there's something that you can do to help. And I'm here to help. But as far as I'm concerned, Jim's been in that house all his life. I think it's outrageous what they're doing. And Jim deserves the house, and he deserves everything that his mother's left him. And as regards them disputing the will, I know I spoke to his mother on numerous occasions. My mother spoke to his mother on numerous occasions. And because of the way Linda treated her mother, she was not happy Helen was not happy for Linda to really get anything because she really was quite nasty to her mother. And I mean, I'd been at a couple of meals on occasions, and it really was quite embarrassing. So, you know, I hope Jim gets what he deserves. I really do. I don't know. I just think something needs to be done about this. I think there needs to be some vigilance done on solicitors and barristers in the way that they run their business, because I was always told there's two people, you know, that you can't catch up, or you can't and that's solicitors and policemen. You can't do anything because it's the system. You can't go against the system. And I feel that Jim really is due everything. But this lady solicitor in Lisbon, Old O'Toole, is destroying it for everybody, really. So I don't know what can be done, Andy. I really don't know what I could do. But I hope Jim gets it sorted one way or the other.
Well, I go down the polite way of, you know, naming and shaming them. Because
yes.
The only reason for that is... If it is a club and they're all in it, then nothing's going to be done. I mean, we found that out in the Patrick Coyle case. It was a big club, but they all belonged to it. Nothing happened. But in some cases, when the lawyer's just the dodgy one, or the policeman, for argument's sake, or they're just the court officials doing things wrong, then one of the other people will say, well, I'm clean, I've done nothing wrong. It's them who's doing it wrong. And basically a whistleblower comes out of the case, and then things get sorted. But when you're all in it together, nobody's going to win.
No. And there must be a governing body of some sort that goes in and checks out that these, what are meant to be professional people, are running their business and you know, in the right way. But they're not. Half of them are all as corrupt as the next fellow. It's outrageous. And they're all over money. You know? So I hope that Jim gets it sorted, Andy, anyway, one way or the other. But there must be an ombudsman, as well as his lien, obviously. That's a serious matter. I mean, they're going to have to pay attention to that one way or the other, because, you know, that has to be sorted. But there must be an ombudsman of some sort that overlooks the law societies and sees that these people are acting in the right way.
Yeah, there is a law society ombudsman everywhere.
Yeah. So I don't know whether Jim's got in touch with them, but if he hasn't, we will.
And I'm almost certain that although Belfast may have dodgy lawyers, there is somebody somewhere in Northern Ireland who does property, wills and human rights stuff, and they'll still be available to help. Even at this late stage, I know there's somebody out there, because I was searching for a UK version of a similar lawyer, and there's millions of them, especially on Twitter, because on Twitter, you seem to find what they actually do and what they specialise in. So I may try and find him some contacts.
Okay. Well, is there anything else that I could offer?
No, not really. I wanted to ask Dave. At the moment, I don't know. But before we end this little segment, I wanted to ask David a question.
And no problem.
Yeah, I've just forgotten what it was. Hang on. Yeah, we've gone through the house. I've sent you some more links, by the way, because that's some good reading, and I think I need to see if there's maybe an ombudsman or a charity that you know, overlooks these things.
Yeah.
If I just mention, Andy, Graham likes to call me Jim, because my mother called me Jim. I've always been called Jim, but it's David Jim, so sometimes he might say David and Jim, you see.
Yes, Jim. No problem. Jim.
Yeah.
You know, I've forgotten what that question was, and it was a good one, but I've forgotten. Never mind. Well, tomorrow then we'll go on to the calling them up and see if we get a response from anyone.
Yes.
I've sent you the Law Society complaints procedures and all that.
We've already been through that, Andy.
I know.
They sent me back to the police. And the law was changed in regards to the Law Society. That lady, Diane, was it last night, explained that 3 years ago, the Law Society can now refer matters to the police. And there was another will fraud case here. The solicitor went to jail for 12 months, 3 counts of will fraud. His name was Erwin from Moira. and it was the Law Society that contacted the police. So I've given the Law Society the evidence. They haven't disputed the evidence, and they have not contacted the police.
Now, what's their official line, though? What's their official letter?
They said that was a matter for the police. I've got the letter at home. I'm going to send that over to you. Fraud is a matter for the police. So I've got another letter which I'm sending back to them to explain that the solicitor, Irwin, was discovered by the Law Society calling the police. So obviously, people had maybe had tried to resolve this fraud that he was doing, and at some stage, the Law Society then said, oh, we'll get the police. And then it fell apart, and he went to court, and he was convicted for 12 months, three counts of will fraud. We have a judge in the south of Ireland, the Judge Perrin. She's been convicted for will fraud, and lots of the other frauds she's been taken to court for while she's in jail. She was frauding St. Vincent de Paul's charities. So if you left any money there, charity or something, she was pocketing the money that was devoted to charity.
Well, I'll send you a link of the Solicitors Regulation Authority complaints against lawyers, basically, in Northern Ireland. But there's quite a few lawyers deal with Northern Ireland that are based in England. And one of them's a good one. It's the Civil Fraud and Investigations people.
But surely, Andy, you need money for these people. You see, with the economy in such a state that it is over here at the moment, all the councils are losing their money. Everyone's losing their money. There's no more legal aid. So it would be difficult for Jim. I mean, is there any company over there that can offer maybe legal aid to Jim on this one?
Well, I was going to say, under general rules, because I know a bit, because I'm fighting in courts for people, for my children, and I do know that under civil legal aid rules, this type of thing isn't banned. So a lot of things are being banned. This isn't being banned. What they do is they look at the merits of the case, and if they think there's a good chance of winning, they'll pay the money for sure. So I don't think legal aid is totally gone yet.
No, but
Andy, I must point out that. Sorry, Graham. I must point out that Judge Horner was issued a commercial lien in the Royal Courts of Justice to Chester Street Family Court 1, and he was also issued a citizen's arrest for the fraud, and he has been sending me repeatedly new dates for cases, and he's going to be sitting in front of me. And I spoke with Judge Curry, and he stated he most certainly, definitely should not be on your case. So that gives you an idea of how they work. Even when it gets to the point where there's a conflict of interest and you could point that out to them, they still continue with their fraud.
You just keep writing letters saying, I don't want that judge.
Yes, I have done that. And they send me new letters. You have a new hearing. I went to one new hearing, and the security stopped me outside and told me to behave myself because the judge was arrested on the last hearing. We're going to remove you from court. And so what they're doing now is they won't let me speak. So they're taking you in like a dummies meeting, and they're frauding the estate, and they're just pushing you out the door if you want to speak. So I didn't go to that hearing. So they sent me another letter. We are going to give you another chance. That's the way they worded it. We decided to give you another chance.
So this Monday's another chance?
It's just given, I think it's an action they took against me because I wouldn't go to the hearings because I'm not going to go in front of Judge Horner. As far as I'm concerned, Judge Horner's just a criminal. And he shouldn't be working in justice. The same happened with Justice Deaning. He was issued his commercial lien. And he stayed on for three or four more hearings. And I was taken into the commercial court where I would have won. They couldn't rebut the paperwork. And the commercial judge went back to Deaning, and Deaning decided, no, bring it back here, after telling me to take them to court because he just wanted to proceed with the will. So it was, and then he said, oh, no, don't let that go into that commercial court. Bring it back here. And they're doing it they're doing the case under the guise of a commercial list. But no, it's not really. It's back to back with the will to keep it all quiet and do it all in one go, launder it and steal the money from the estate. And Linda Martin, that's her game. She wants to leave me without anything. She doesn't care if she doesn't get anything out of it. She just wants to destroy what I have because I had a relationship with my mother. And I lived with her for 6 years, the last 6 years before she died. So I'm in, and of course, I lived in that house previously. My sister didn't live in that house at all. She used to live in a high-rise flat that we used to live in when we lived together as a family. At that stage, she'd taken up with Mr. Martin, and they went and got their own house. So she didn't live at 10 Chippendale Gardens, and I was there 6 years before my mother died. Not because I asked to be there, because my mother asked me to be there. She was worried on her own. She wanted somebody about the house. And I've been there 3 years now since my mother has died. So I don't want to give up the family home that my mother wanted me to have. She didn't want to have the house. She went through all these things with her friend, Jennifer Bisnow. And Jennifer, they wouldn't let Jennifer come to court. They didn't want anybody that was going to explain any different than they wanted. In other words, we're laundering this now. This is the way it is. The will that my mother made wasn't produced, and the lawyer has gone back to an old will.
We've just run out of time now, my friend.
Okay then, Andy. It's been great speaking with you.
Yeah, we'll do some... hang on a minute. Let me just do this. So,